News from NPR is made possible in part by a grant from Champaign-Danville Overhead Doors, serving businesses and families since 1959 in Ogden, Illinois.
Funds for this day of broadcasting come in part from a contribution by Bill and Harriet Williamson in honor of their granddaughter, Madeline Weitzel, on her 11th birthday.
Programming on WILL is made possible in part by Strawberry Fields on West Springfield Avenue in downtown Urbana. Strawberry Fields has an in-store nutritionist, provides a wide assortment of natural foods, vitamins, and supplements, as well as a full deli, coffee bar, bulk herbs, fresh breads, and produce.
This is the Afternoon Magazine on WILL AM 580 and online at WILL.UYUC.edu. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. This afternoon, we welcome your questions for registered dietitian Susan Kundrat. She joins us on the first Monday of the month to talk about diet, nutrition, and exercise. I welcome your questions for Susan. If you'd like to talk with her, give us a call. Here are the numbers in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, call toll-free, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Susan Kundrat is a sports and wellness nutritionist and the owner of Nutrition on the Move. She specializes in developing personalized nutrition plans for athletes and the general public. She's an adjunct lecturer with the Food Science and Human Nutrition Department at the University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign. She's a frequent contributor to magazines on health and fitness, and she's the author of 101 Sports Nutrition Tips, the publisher Coach's Choice. You can find Susan on the web at www.eatandmove.com. She also has an office at Strawberry Fields in Urbana. Questions for Susan? You're welcome to give us a call this afternoon, 333-9455, 800-222-9455. I'm going to say good afternoon, and then I'm going to put some people on the air.
Very good.
Okay, good to see you again.
You too.
Let's talk with our first listener, caller on line one in Champaign. Hi.
Good afternoon. I've spent some time with Google trying to find the vitamin D content of sardines and Alaska wild salmon and other fish like that. And I haven't been able to come up with anything. And I was wondering if you happen to know the values or would know how to find them.
Well, I'm going to look up a couple things right now to see if I could find some values for you. You know, we think about, let's say, for instance, with fish, we think about calcium and vitamin D, and a lot of times that's partly from the bones. And so some of that comes if you eat, let's say, canned fish with the bones, canned salmon, something like that with the bones, which often we don't now. So that's what contributes some of that. But let me see if I can find here a little bit on vitamin D to see where we can find the highest levels in there. Certainly if you look at vitamin D fortified foods, things like milk products and things with vitamin D, that's one of the best places to find it as well. And let me just check here. Not finding anything too fast, but I will find it.
And we are talking about vitamin D. And recently there was a study out that found that many adults are deficient in vitamin D. And there's now some thinking that you should get a little bit of sun.
Right, exactly. I think that's, you probably have seen a lot about that, especially now in the summer with looking at how much sunshine should you get with or without having suntan lotion on or sunscreen on. And some of these new studies that have come out have really found when they take a look at particularly older populations, particularly in the north like us, that a lot of people in their 50s, 60s, or older are very low in vitamin D. And, of course, that can contribute to brittle bones. That can contribute to osteoporosis and early bone breakages and things like that. And so I know lately I've had a lot of clients who've had some of these issues that I've really encouraged them to go to their doc and try to get some of these tests done to find out how they come, you know, where that looks, that they lie in terms of their risk. I have the nutrition book that I have with me lists a few things with vitamin D. Generally, what we think of in terms of, you know, the amounts that you want to try to get are generally, 400. We look at something like 400 IUs a day, or a lot of supplements will have 200 IUs or maybe up to 400 IUs a day. Now, of course, we don't find vitamin D on a lot of foods. Like you're saying, you know, with the collar, it's hard to find in a lot of foods where you're going to get that. Generally, what you find, like I said, with the salmon, what I have listed here is salmon with bones, canned, 3 ounces, which would be around 200 to 500 IUs. So I'm not sure how much you're going to find without those bones. Most milks have about 100 IU per cup. And so if you're trying to get enough of the, you know, if you're using milk products partly for your calcium and your protein, and if it's fortified milk, like generally that's what you're going to find, then even 3 or 4 cups a day or 3 or 4 milk sources a day are going to give you that 300 or 400 IUs right there. But there are also fortified things. You know, a lot of cereals have a little bit in them. Here's an example of cornflakes with 40 IUs per cup. An egg has a 25. Even margarine that generally is milk-based or you know, animal-based is going to have, butter-based is going to have some vitamin D in it too. And those are the ones I have listed right now. One thing you can do, if you're online, you can look up foods, and there's a nutrition analysis tool that was originally developed here at the University of Illinois with Jim Painter and his group, and I use that a lot. You can get on that online to try to find some more of these nutrients, and that's just, I'll give you that website, that's just www.nat.uiuc.edu. And that will take you to the original website, and you can pull over to the new one because there's a new one linked to that now. And you can put in particular foods, and then you can analyze them.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah.
You found a value there in a book. What's the book?
The book that I have here that I use, it's actually the American Dietetics Association Complete Food and Nutrition Guide. It's kind of a big, it's a paperback book that is published by the American Dietetics Association, and it's really a compilation of a lot of general nutrition things. It doesn't go in depth necessarily with vitamins and minerals too much, but it gives a pretty good idea. And another website I might recommend too is one called Supplement Watch. It's just www.supplementwatch.com. And there you can find information on supplements, but often it'll have some listings of food sources and specific research articles, but it's really consumer friendly. I find that to be very helpful as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and the value that you found in the book was 300 to 500 IU in 3 ounces, was that right?
Yeah, it was actually 200 to 500 in that range of
okay.
3 ounces of salmon with bones, canned.
Okay. And you said something earlier about nowadays people not wanting to use the salmon with the bones in. I didn't know about that. What's the story on that?
Well, what I see a lot of consumers using the packaged salmon that actually comes kind of in the foil pack that you just squeeze out, that's easy, and maybe not using the canned salmon with bones as much, because you can find now canned salmon without bones. And I think just more for the probably the mess factor, people aren't using that as much, and so what you're gonna get less calcium and get less vitamin D from that too, to some extent.
I see. Does your book have anything for sardines?
No, I'm afraid we don't have sardines listed on this, but I think it would be probably pretty similar to the salmon with bones, would be my guess.
Uh-huh. Well, this has been very helpful. I appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
Okay, thanks for the call. This afternoon, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll free, 800-222-9455. Let's talk with another listener in Champaign on line 2. Hi.
Hi. I enjoy sunflower seeds and soy nuts, but I see on the label that they're roasted in cottonseed oil. Could you tell me what you think of cottonseed oil?
Well, generally the amount of fat that you're going to get with roasted seeds or nuts or things, most of that fat is still going to come from the seed or nut itself. And so cottonseed oil is kind of a medium oil in that it's maybe a bit more saturated than some like olive oil or canola oil or certainly
yeah.
those. But if it's roasted in some cottonseed oil, I wouldn't count that as a real negative myself, because I would say, well, most of the fat you're still getting is going to be primarily from the nuts themselves or primarily more monounsaturated fat. And so the biggest thing you really want to think about with nuts is if they're roasted in oil and you don't need the extra calories, your better bet might be more for just a natural nut that's not roasted in a lot of extra oil.
Sure.
But if the calories are not a big concern, you know, you can be assured that most of that fats you're getting is probably still from the original nut or seed. And so that's going to put you in good shape.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Let's talk with another listener, a listener in Urbana. Line 3. Hi.
Hello.
Yeah, go ahead.
I have a couple of questions, but first, in response to the last question, I wonder, using cottonseed oil, isn't cotton treated in many instances with herbicides, and wouldn't that linger in the oil, or is that done away with in the processing?
Well, that's a good question. I'm not an expert in that field. I would think that there certainly might be some residue there, and you might want to look for a product that might be an organic product if you're concerned with that. And certainly, you know, now there are a lot of even nuts and seeds and things that are out there that are organic as well, and wouldn't be nothing that would be in the product would have pesticides in it. So that would be an option too. And certainly we're seeing more of those products on the market all the time.
All right, let's see. My second question regards oatmeal. When I was a very young boy in the 1930s, I recall eating oatmeal, and it had a natural sweetness that's very difficult for me to describe. And the oatmeal today just seems very bland. Now, I recognize things have changed. For example, whole milk was used back then, and now we use skim milk. And sugar, cane sugar, was primarily available back then. And I suppose the experience where I was identifying with the experience during which I ate that. But I'm wondering if the oatmeal has basically been changed, through changing the seeds and mutations over the years, so that oatmeal no longer tastes as it did back in the 1930s.
Boy, I guess that's a possibility. Some of that, I don't know enough about that specific topic to really comment on that necessarily, but I will say that what you might have eaten and probably did eat years ago is probably more of the whole grain or the very unprocessed oat.
Yes, with the old-fashioned oats, I'm
sure. Sure, and so there's a different, definitely a different taste between that type of oat and then more of the processed oats that are quick oats or anything like that we typically get served if we're somewhere.
There are a number of different varieties now, instant,
sure.
Quick, mm-hmm. And then the steel cut.
Right.
I've noticed even eating the old-fashioned oats, it still seems different. But I suppose there may have been varieties in the seeds.
Right, right. I'm sure there were. And maybe a difference, like you're saying, because of the type of milk you had, and if it was more fresh milk and those kinds of things, there certainly could be a difference in the sugar, natural sugar or sweetened content in that. And I think the other thing that happens sometimes as we get older, we don't taste sweet and salty as much as we did when we were younger, which could be partly what happens too. It's harder to differentiate, I think, the sweetness or the saltiness too.
Yes, I wondered about that.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. But may I ask one more question, short one?
Sure.
This regards chocolate and cocoa and antioxidants. I know, recently the research has discovered that cocoa is a pretty good source of antioxidants, but I've also seen reference to the fact that this is not so true of cocoa that's Dutch processed with alkali. Is that true?
Well, the differences that I've seen primarily have been depending upon how dark the chocolate is, more so than anything else. At least that's what I've seen, and that's been more related to the natural dark chocolates tend to have more of this antioxidant than a milk chocolate or a chocolate that might be more sweetened chocolate. And I don't know if that's affected more by the processing, or my guess is it's just more the, type of cocoa that is a much stronger cocoa flavor that you're getting, because you're getting more of the antioxidants as well. And that's really the thing that we can recommend right now. We know there does seem to be quite a difference if you have the real dark chocolate. That would be maybe the more bitter chocolate, and that tends to be a lot higher in antioxidants and more than milk chocolate.
Uh-huh. I've noted that Hershey's did come out with Dutch processed cocoa a while back, but they discontinued this. Mm.
That could be part of it. I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you very much.
Thanks for the questions. Let's talk with another listener, also in Urbana, on line one. Hi.
Hi. I've been reading lately that they're urging a change in the recommended amounts for vitamin D and upping it like to 1,000 IUs a day. But for different amounts for different ages, more as we age, what do you know about this?
Right, exactly. I think that's with these new studies that have come out, and certainly a lot of things you might read or what I'm reading in some of the nutrition newsletters I get that try to provide more up-to-date reviews of the research that's coming out, that certainly a lot of researchers are recommending more. They're basically saying that across the board, again, particularly if you don't live in a climate where you're getting a lot of natural, you know, vitamin D from the sun, that we just so many people are extremely low in vitamin D, and it's not something that's typically tested for. And so it is something that you'd have to go in and really request blood tests to see where you are in terms of vitamin D. And so, like you're saying, we really recommend, you know, 400 IUs a day, but for many people that's still going to be very low. I've seen cases and I've read about cases where people are put on 10 or 20 times that amount to try to bump up their vitamin D stores, if not more. And so I think that this is something that probably will be changed, and a lot of people now are just recommending more. They're recommending across the board for people, if you're concerned at all, to get tested, and then at the same time consider taking an additional vitamin D supplement. Certainly we recommend, particularly as we age, particularly over 50 or so, that you're on a specific multivitamin mineral that would have ample amounts of vitamin D. But again, that's more just the regular recommended amounts. That's not going to be double or triple. And so I think it's a good thing for people to get tested for or request that. If they think they're at risk, particularly if you've got any history of osteoporosis or family concerns with that, or you're very thin, you're slighted build, you might be at high risk for bone disease, then that would be something that certainly I'd want to talk with my physician about with that. And at the same time, for many people, we know they're still low in calcium. There's a real problem with that as well. And that, of course, affects bone health. And so making sure that a calcium supplement that you would take if you needed that also had the vitamin D with it. Because often if you think if you get vitamin D in your calcium supplement, you might have vitamin D in your multivitamin, and you're getting two or three servings a day of a vitamin D fortified food or a high vitamin D food, you could easily get 1,000 IUs. So I don't think that's that hard to come by if you're taking what you need in addition to eating a healthy diet with that as well. But that's a good point, because I think we're going to see more and more come out. There hadn't been that much research about vitamin D, at least it didn't seem like it until the last 3 or 4 years. Now we're seeing a lot more.
Well, I thought I just read something, too, about inadequate vitamin D causing muscle weakness and aching as you age, and being associated with higher levels in the blood being associated with lower risk for certain kinds of cancers. I'm sorry, I don't have the studies in front of me. Mm-hmm. I'm not organized, and I don't remember the details. And also that as we age, our skins are not as efficient at making vitamin D, and people with darker skin, such as African Americans, are likely to have less vitamin D and have less skin manufacturing of vitamin D, all of which I thought was really interesting, so I'm paying more attention to
right.
getting my vitamin D. I was thinking about the salmon with the bones and thinking, you know, a lot of sometimes what we make in terms of decisions have to do with what we think is the proper way to prepare food. And if people haven't had canned salmon, the bones are pretty squishy. It's not mm-hmm. like getting bones in fresh fish that you cook.
Right,
they
right.
really mesh up. And I'm going to go back to making spaghetti sauce with canned salmon. You can just toss it in and, you know, buy a jar of spaghetti sauce mm-hmm. and you got a quick meal. But I wanted to mention one other thing, and it's not necessarily, it has to do with food, but not necessarily nutrition. I ran across a poisonous plant when I was, some people may remember me as the garlic mustard woman who goes every spring and works on pulling garlic mustard. Well, this spring I also ran into a huge stand of something called poison hemlock. And it's not the tree. It's a 7-foot-tall biennial herb. And as I was looking it up to see what to do about it, I read that there have been cases of poisoning. And then I ran across it in my neighborhood yesterday. Hmm. And I mentioned it to the people whose yards it was in, and I looked up some more information, and it said some people have been poisoned from it because they thought it was parsley.
Hmm.
Huge plant. And when I mentioned this to one of my neighbors, he said, "Oh, my goodness." He said, "I thought it was like parsley, and I was going to have some." And it said that sheep have been poisoned by it. It was just 2 ounce intake for a sheep. I don't know how much a sheep weighs, but
wow.
It's something to pay attention to. There are two similar plants, and people might want to look up on the Internet water hemlock and poison hemlock. They might want to check before they imbibe, taste test something that they think might be natural, but might be showing up in yards. It's a pretty conspicuous plant. When the one that's a year old that's producing flowers, they both get to be pretty tall, like 6 or 7 feet, and they're blooming right now. So I just thought I would mention that people should be careful and not just assume that everything is natural, it's safe. Okay, thanks a bunch.
Thanks for the call. Next, we talk with a listener in Urbana on line 2. Hi.
Yeah, hi. I'm wondering if there's any product out there that has the same electrolytes that you find in Gatorade, but you can like get it in some kind of maybe like a packet you can mix with water or something like that.
Well, certainly there are different kinds of products out there. There are, and you can find at some of the sports stores in particular, there'll be a lot of electrolyte products that you can just mix with water. Of course, something like Gatorade or some of those, you can get the powders and mix with water too.
You can get Gatorade powder?
You can. Mm-hmm. You can get Gatorade powder and mix it with water as well. In fact, that's what a lot of teams will do. They'll take the powder along places and mix it with water when they get there and then use it that way. I'm trying to think if I've actually seen something that would be very similar. You know, if you look at a sport drink like Powerade or Gatorade or Allsport or something like that, you know, the main things you find is you find about a 6%, 7% carbohydrate, which is usually about equivalent to what you're going to find in a teaspoon of sugar, basically, in that. Or you look at teaspoon for maybe a quarter cup and then 4 teaspoons for a cup. And then you have sodium, potassium, and then flavoring or coloring or things like that. So mainly the electrolytes you're looking at are sodium, potassium. And I'm trying to think if I've seen other products like that have been more in the packet forms. Because you can find, of course, now you can find things like Crystal Light or iced tea or all those things in just the little packets that you pour out that are actually quite convenient when you're traveling. But I don't know that I've seen a lot of the other sport drink type things. But what I would suggest, because there are so many new products coming out all the time, I would suggest, you know, looking particularly not only at grocery stores but also at sports stores or even running stores or places like that, because if there are new products that are coming out like that in forms that are portable, generally those are the places to find them. Because when you've got distance runners or endurance cyclists or things, they're always looking for something that you can pack and take with you that you might be able to mix with water. So you're not taking as much actual weight with you when you're either on the bike or when you're running. And so a lot of these other products also, you know, one time or another have been in powdered form as well. And so, you know, I'm thinking things like Cytomax and some of these other ones that are out there. So that's probably where I would check, because you might find something that really fits what you're looking for in a powdered form as well as a liquid.
Gatorade doesn't have the carbs in it, does it?
Yes, it does. Mm-hmm. Gatorade has 14 grams of carb per cup, which is pretty standard in terms of just a sport drink that you'd use during exercise. That's pretty typical. And so, again, if you look at that, that's about 60 calories per cup, which is, you know, most sport drinks will have 50 to 80 or so per cup. And that's generally the amount of carbohydrate that you can absorb while you exercise. More than that, for most people, their gut can't handle that while they work out. So it's going to be too much sugar, too much carbohydrate.
Oh, okay. Because I definitely thought there were some of the, maybe not all of them, but some of the drinks that had a lot more. And I've always had a problem with you know, a lot of people complain about, Gatorade doesn't taste so good, but it actually tastes essentially better than anything else once it gets warm. And all those other drinks get that, like, really syrupy, and they taste kind of yucky.
I think the main thing to look for, you know, if you're exercising, is just to make sure that there's a real big difference between during exercise. That's when your carbs should be pretty low. I mean, you should have enough to give you energy, but again, they should be in this range of maybe 14 to 18 grams per serving, which is usually per cup. So that's kind of what you want to look for from what the studies have found that you can actually absorb. And then pre and post, of course, you can have something with more carbohydrate because you're not using that during exercise. And so I think what gets confusing for people is what should I have during or before or after? And certainly if you can handle something with more carbohydrate before or after, that might be more beneficial to you because you can sort of load up and then reload after your workouts. But during, you definitely, you're better off having something with carbohydrate and electrolytes, particularly if you're training very hard or it's very hot, but you want it to be able to be absorbed. And so you certainly don't want too much in terms of the percentage.
Okay, so the carbs are in the powder also, and that stores pretty well.
Mm-hmm. They sure are.
Okay, that's good. That's all I wanted to check. That sounds like it'll work a lot better.
Okay. Good luck.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks for the call. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area if you'd like to talk with registered dietitian Susan Kundrat. Anywhere else, call toll-free 800-222-9455. 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL. This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580 WILL. My name is Celeste Quinn. Susan Kundrat joins us on the first Monday of the month to talk about diet, nutrition, and exercise. Phone lines are open. No one waiting at the moment. You know, on this sports drink thing, I'm recalling now a friend of mine, when her son was a little bit younger, she had in her freezer, in case he got sick or came down with not feeling good, or they could take this out to the playground in the summer, living in Texas, very hot. It was a product made for children, and it was like a Cool Pop with electrolyte in it. Like, I don't know if it was named Pedia-Pop or what.
Probably.
Are you familiar with that?
Yeah, definitely. The ones that I've seen have been put out by Pedialyte, so they're either Pedia-Pop or something like that, and you can freeze them just like in a freezer stick, like you're saying, like a Freezy Pop type thing. And those work really well, too, because, again, sometimes with kids, the saltiness or the electrolytes, they don't like, but then if they're cold, they're better, if they're frozen, and certainly if something's more like a frozen dessert type thing, it's easier to handle. And you see those now in suckers, too, and things like that to try to get some electrolytes back in. So different ways that'll be helpful. But, of course, that's a great way to think about using it because it's cold. You're going to get more fluids in. They might be more apt to eat that than drink it. And often the taste is different when it's frozen versus when you drink it.
Well, she'd throw a couple in the cooler with one of those ice packs like this. Solid blue things that you put in the freezer and take it, they head out, and she said, it's not half bad.
Right. It's a great idea. And I think the other thing sometimes we forget about, natural sources, particularly a potassium, one of the best natural sources of potassium is orange juice. And so if you've got kids who are exercising too, even getting them extra orange juice, maybe as opposed to some of the other juices that aren't as high, is a great thing too, because at least that replenishes potassium better. Of course, you're not going to have much sodium, but another thing to think about is take orange juice and mix it half with water and then add just a teeny little bit of salt.
Banana, another great thing.
Sure.
And raisins, aren't they pretty high in potassium?
Raisins have some. And actually, milk is another good source. Meat's another good source. So fruits and vegetables in general, we know, are really great source of potassium. And that's why a lot of the new recommendations coming out now for cardiovascular health are focusing, not only on dropping your sodium, but certainly making sure you're getting more potassium, because we know that's making a bigger difference in terms of studies we have as far as more potassium, keeping more of a balance with your potassium and sodium, helping with blood sugar and cardiovascular health. So just by automatically increasing your fruits and veggies, then that's going to naturally get you more potassium.
Well, that's
as well.
Something I wanted to ask you about actually today, because I wanted to mention an article that was in the Washington Post online not long ago. And what they did is they conducted a taste test of some of the healthier choices being offered by fast food restaurants. And they started off with this piece, this caveat. A lot of the things are still very high in sodium.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But they said, balance that with having a banana, box of raisins, glass of orange juice as your beverage. And so I thought, is there a connection?
Mm-hmm.
So if you ingest sodium, then you can help kind of make some kind of balance there.
Right. With the potassium helps. And a lot of times you'll see some people may be on medications for blood pressure, but then they're taking extra potassium because as you lose fluid, you may be losing potassium along with that too. So we find that that's a concern for many people for cardiovascular health. So just health in general, if we can up the potassium, we find, well, that seems to maybe play, you know, decrease our risk or play a role in staying healthy. And so that is a good thing. And fast food, that's an automatic, an easy thing to do. Maybe you get hamburger and a small fries, which isn't so bad, but then you have orange juice with it. Well, or even milk, which is going to give you more potassium too, and you're not going to get a lot of extra fat. You're going to certainly help yourself in other ways. And all the new products a lot of the new salads that are out now, actually, I think are quite good at a lot of fast food places. So, you know, I was just traveling recently with my daughter and my mom, and we were back to Iowa and back through kind of the old, you know, places, and we stopped for fast food a few times, and that was really an easy way to do it. Buy one of those big salads. You each get a little hamburger. I think my mom probably thinks I'm crazy when she travels with me, but, you know, you each get a little hamburger, you buy a big salad, you split it, and if you want fries, you all split a small one. You have a few fries each, and really that's, I mean, yeah. A lot of times we just want a taste of something, and that often does it.
Some fast food outlets are now offering fruit as part of your, rather than the combo with fries, you can either have a baked potato or you can have
Mandarin oranges
or mixed fruit cup, something like that.
Or the apple slices with a little bit of caramel, and those are good at McDonald's. So I think they're really moving in the right direction, but we still have to make those choices. I mean, it's really easy to still get a supersized meal, and, you know, basically we don't need all that food and we don't need all that fat.
A couple of other good tips from this article, as I'm recalling now, watch the salad dressing, and if they have a vinaigrette, go for that. Instead of the creamies.
Yeah, very good point.
Okay. Let's talk with another listener in Urbana on line one. Hi.
Hello.
Hi there.
Hi. I had a question regarding amino acids, and I just wanted to know if you had any research-based concerns, because most of the information I find is pertaining to advertisement when you really get down to it.
Yeah. Are you thinking of taking amino acids more for workouts or for what reason?
Well, you know, I'm pretty active and I do work out regularly. But what I've noticed in the effects that they give me are more energy. And I'm sure it's something that's affecting hormones and testosterone levels. But I just want to know, you know, more along the lines of what you thought, more from a research-based perspective rather than what you find out and about on the internet, and
right.
It's mostly geared towards advertising, and I can't trust, you know, it's hard to find solid information on amino acids other than just, well, they're for bodybuilders,
right?
For example, but I just want to know what your thoughts were on that.
Right, I think that brings up a really good point, because I think something that a lot of people don't know, when you do look at some, and not all, but many of the magazines, particularly fitness magazines or bodybuilding magazines, often what you'll find is that sometimes the publisher is also the owner of the supplement companies that are recommended in there. So just like you're saying, you might have an article about something, but then right next to it is an ad for this amino acid, and then the ad is actually marketed through the company that sells a magazine. So you run into a lot of problems with that. You know, what we do know about amino acids is they're really important in the body. Of course, they're building blocks of protein. So if you took a protein, you broke it apart, what you're going to break it apart to is all these different amino acids. If you have enough of all the amino acids in the body when you're training, certainly we know that you'll train better. We know you'll recover better if you have amino acids on board after workouts, because you can replenish the amino acids that you've either used in workouts, or your tissue breaks down a bit, you know, particularly if you lift weights or you're working out really hard, you get sore. Part of that is your muscle tissue has been stretched, and you need some amino acids along with carbs to replenish that energy and hopefully repair tissue. And there actually was a really good, I don't have the study with me right now, but I think it was in, I'm pretty sure it was in Sports Medicine. You can look up that journal called Sports Medicine. I know it was last year, and there was an article in there that talked all about specific needs, carbohydrate, protein, fat, amino acids, broke it all down for bodybuilding. And I really extrapolated that. It really made sense just for strength building in general. It wasn't just on bodybuilding, but more strength building. And I guess the gist of that article was talking about how the most important thing if you're trying to work out hard is that you've got enough energy on board. You've eaten well before. You've eaten well the day before. You know, you're eating 2 or 3 hours before a workout, so you've got some energy on board. And then the other thing that's talked about, particularly with amino acids, was how important it is to have some amino acids in your system right before you work out. Now, that doesn't mean you have to take an amino acid supplement, but even something as simple as milk, which gets digested pretty quickly because it's liquid form, basically it's protein. A cup of milk is 8 grams of protein, and 8 grams of protein is a lot of amino acids. What this article looked at was saying that you want probably at least 6 grams of amino acid available when you're training. And
what
so,
that makes a lot of sense. And what I'm really looking for is more of the psychological or energy effects, or both. And what I've noticed is when I do take the amino acids prior to a workout, I mean, I just can keep going,
mm-hmm.
and going and going. And some of the research I have read in elderly cases or samplings has also indicated a reduction in joint pain. I mean, and there's so much of that I'm trying to dig through to get a clear picture from someone rather than, and then all of a sudden you may see something where they're selling something. So I don't want to mess with that. But
well, the thing we do know is that, again, if you're well-nourished with protein breaks down to amino acids. And so part of that is it's still a real big question whether you need to take the amino acids in supplemental form. What we do know is you got to have them. And so you want a diet that's got ample protein in it. You want to make sure that a few hours before your workout you've eaten, and you've eaten something with carbs and protein and preferably a little fat for energy. So, and you've got good, solid protein sources like meat or like turkey or eggs or milk or something like that. And so that's available for you during workouts. And then the other thing we do know is ideally after really hard workouts, you want carbohydrate plus protein back in your system quickly, like a lot of recovery drinks that are formatted with both. But also something, again, as simple as studies at Indiana University that did these studies this last year on chocolate milk as a recovery, because, of course, you've got very available amino acids. You've got more calories, more sugar, more carbohydrate, which you need, too. And so I guess my overall approach would be to, you know, you probably don't need to focus so much on the actual amino acids themselves. The problem with supplementing with 1 or 2 or 3 is that you're not getting all the other ones. And so there's some question of whether your body can absorb them as well, whether you're going to be able to form complete proteins as well. So from a safety standpoint of not going too much of any one amino acid, get protein in food for sure. And then if you take extra in a supplemental form, I wouldn't go overboard on any one amino acid. I wouldn't focus totally on 1 or 2 because, again, you might be missing out on other things. We know a lot more about the safety from the foods themselves. But be well-nourished when you go into workouts. Be well-hydrated when you go into workouts. And then try to get some recovery fuel in there within the first 15 or 30 minutes after a workout as well. And do that consistently. You will definitely have better workouts.
Okay. I appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Thanks for the call. No one waiting at the moment. If you'd like to talk with Susan this afternoon about diet, nutrition, exercise, give us a call. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll free, 800-222-9455. Speaking of protein, I wanted to get your opinion. Have you heard anything about these enriched pastas? They're multigrain. I don't know if they've incorporated other things into them, but they come with more protein and omega-3.
Mm-hmm. I haven't tried them, but I have seen some information on them. I think we're going to see more and more products like this. The real push we see right now is whole grains, is trying to make sure if you're eating bread, you're eating whole grain bread, whether that's whole wheat bread or rye bread or higher fiber. And fiber is one way you can, of course, tell if something's whole grain, if the fiber is higher. So some of these pastas that are coming out that are enriched pastas, it seems to me they're adding more protein in them. And that might be from, because it's more of a natural grain and you've got more protein. Some of them I've seen soy protein added to them, maybe some additional whey protein or milk protein added to them, and then more fiber. And I think it's a great idea because pasta is something that we eat a lot of generally. And so if we can have a pasta that gives us more protein and more fiber, and like you mentioned earlier, still tastes good, that's really the trick.
That's the key.
And it's not going to be too chewy, then I think we're in good shape. Yeah. There are pastas out there now that, you know, been around for a long time, corn pasta and certainly whole wheat pasta and some other pastas, spirulina pasta that's got spirulina mm-hmm. in and some of these other ones. That also are worth a try because a lot of people like those as well, and they're more of the natural grain pasta. And then we'll be looking at these other ones that are coming out. But I would encourage people, when they see some of these new pastas, what you'll find, again, is more protein. So it might be more like 10 or 12 grams of protein per serving or so, and more fiber, maybe 4, 5, 6, 7 grams of fiber per serving, which is a lot. And that would definitely be worth trying.
Okay. Let's talk with another listener. A caller on line one happens to be on a cell phone. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm calling from Cerro Gordo, Illinois. I'm an ex-school teacher, and I have a question to ask, and it may sound foolish. But as far as grams go, can the lady break down it into tablespoons, teaspoons, and half cups, like so many grams of sugar, so many grams of salt or fat? Do a little bit of broad translation into things that we can really understand, yeah, like tablespoons.
Mm-hmm. It gets tricky.
Would you kindly?
Sure. Yeah, it gets tricky. And they're different for everything we're talking about. That's the tricky part. When you look at grams, let's say grams of fiber, it's going to be more kind of per weight measure of what you're eating. And so
That'll
be varied based upon, you know, the different type of food you take in. Here's an example. You know, you can kind of look at, if you look at an apple or an orange or a small banana, those are going to be around 3 grams of fiber if you look at grams and what that would look like in terms of amounts. So those might be sort of a medium piece. If you look at, let's say, you know, you look at sugar. One thing that I try to look at is about, if you look at a teaspoon of sugar, that's going to be about 15 or 16 calories, which is going to be about 4 grams. So you're going to find 4 grams of carbohydrate or 4 grams of sugar in about a teaspoon of sugar.
So now, if I have me a 16-ounce bottle of Coke, regular Coke, could you break that down into how many teaspoons or tablespoons of sugar you might think that is?
Let's see if I can do that in my head here. Generally, if you look at, again, if you look at calorie-wise, and if you look at 16 ounces, I'm not sure what that would be offhand, but probably that's going to be...
bottle.
Yeah, that's going to be a big bottle. That's probably going to be somewhere around 250 to 300 calories.
Okay.
So if you look at that in terms of, you know, teaspoons of sugar, if we think, well, 16 calories is 1 teaspoon, and so 160 calories is 10 teaspoons. And so almost double that, let's say if you get around 300 calories, that's 20 teaspoons.
So 20 teaspoons, would that be nearly a half or a fourth of a cup, would you guess?
Well, 20 teaspoons is going to be about 7 tablespoons, which is almost a half a cup.
Wow.
So that would be about a half a cup of sugar. Yeah.
You know, I just had no idea it would be that high. Now, can you kind of do the same thing for salt that you did for sugar, since they both are white crystals?
Right. Well, if you look at a teaspoon of salt, which we can all, you know, think about,
sure,
a teaspoon of salt, that's about 2,400 milligrams of sodium. And really the issue is sodium. So 2,400 milligrams, you know, as a general guideline, you know, if you're looking at watching your sodium intake, if you've got cardiovascular disease or you're concerned about that, generally if somebody's on a lower salt diet, usually it's around 2 grams. Everybody might be different depending upon their concerns. But
sure,
2 grams then is about a teaspoon. You know, a teaspoon's a little bit more than 2 grams, or it's 2,400 milligrams. You know, 1,000 milligrams is a gram.
And 1,000 milligrams is a gram, okay.
Mm-hmm. And so that'd be around a teaspoon or so in your day. And of course that's in food that we eat, food that we salt, food that's processed food. We were talking about fast food there might be 1,000 milligrams in something you get fast food wise. And so if you're watching it, of course, the more processed food you eat, it makes it a lot more difficult to watch your salt, because that can add up very quickly. Now, on the other hand, you know, it depends on what your risk factors are. I've seen quite a few athletes, and I do a lot of work with athletes, but quite a few athletes lately who've actually been watching their salt to the point where they've had a lot of problems with cramping and heat regulation because they're watching it too much.
Right.
And we have athletes who will easily need 10 grams of salt in a day, 10 grams of sodium in a day. So that's going to be, you know, 4 or 5 times what we're talking about. And some people can't even eat that much because it's just hard to get that much salt. So I think you just want to look at your own, you know, risk. I think sometimes people watch sodium, I find, to the level where they're missing out on eating healthy because they're so worried about salt, and maybe they don't have high blood pressure, or they're not at risk for salt-related problems. But, you know, keep an eye on it. But yet, if it's not a risk factor for you, you're better off adding more foods that are going to be healthy. You know, something like canned tomato juice is so high in a lot of other things that if salt's not a problem for you health-wise, hey, go for something like that, and that's not going to
okay.
be a big deal.
Now, this is one more, and I'm finished. Since seafood comes from the ocean, salty water, is seafood extra, extra high in salt that the fresh food, fresh lake trout wouldn't have?
There's not. There's going to be a little bit more in you know, ocean fish, but not that much. Most of the salt, what we're going to find, is going to come from processing. You know,
okay.
it's not going to be – same thing as milk. Milk has sodium in it. If somebody's on an extremely low salt diet, they have to watch the amount of milk they drink. But for most of us, or even on a low salt general, it's not that big of a problem because it's a natural form of sodium.
Gotcha.
But it's – again, we find it more in foods that are a lot more processed, particularly foods that are canned or, again, fast food or things like that.
Hey, thanks a lot for everything.
Okay, thanks for the call. Good questions.
Mm-hmm.
That it boils it down, doesn't it?
It does.
Okay.
It's very confusing, all the grams and milligrams and servings and all these things. And
on the labels, it does help to have percentage of your recommended, what's recommended.
Right,
okay.
right.
We got to wrap it up here. We're out of time. I believe that the first Monday in July is a holiday.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you want to do it on the 5th or you want to make
the 5th is good for me.
Good.
So.
Okay. We'll mark you down for July 5th.
Okay.
Susan Kundrat will join us next on July 5th. And have a happy 4th.
You too. Thank you.
Susan Kundrat. She is the sports and wellness nutritionist and owner of Nutrition on the Move. You can find her on the web at www.eatandmove.com. It's 8 minutes before 2 o'clock. Let's find out what happened today on the Chicago Board of Trade. Here's Dave Dickey.
Thank you very much, Celeste, and good afternoon, everyone. November soybeans made a new contract high today at $7.01, but late in the session, soybeans gave back a large chunk of the gains that they gained today, finishing just off their opening bell numbers, particularly in the nearbys. We'll get to that in just a moment. But first, let's begin as we always do over in the wheat pit. July wheat, a high on the day of 329, a low of 322, settling 322.5, down 3/4. September, a high of 338.5, a low of 331.5, settling 332.25, down 2.25. December, a high of 348.5, a low of 340, settling 341.25, down 1.75. March wheat, a high of 357.5, a low of 351.5, settling 352, down 1. July corn, a high of 225.5, a low of 220.5, settling 220.75, up 2.5. September, a high of 234.5, a low of 229.75, settling 229.75, up 2.5. December corn, a high of 243.25, a low of 238.25, settling 238.5, up 2.25. March, a high of 251, a low of 246.25, settling 246.5, up 2. May, a high of 255.25, a low of 251.25, settling 251.5, up 2.75. July, a high of 259.25, a low of 255, settling 255.25, up 1.5. July oats, a high of 142.5, a low of 140.75, settling 141, up 2. September, a high of 146.75, a low of 145.5, settling 146.75, up 3.25. July soybeans, a high of 695.5, a low of 676.75, settling 677.75, up 2.75. August, a high of 697.5, a low of 679.5, settling 680.25, up 3. September, a high of 698, a low of 680, settling 681.5, up 3.75. November, a high of 701, a low of 684, settling 686, up 6. January, a high of $7 even, a low of 685, settling 686.5, up 7. March, a high of 690, a low of 677, settling 679.5, up 5.25. July soybean meal, a high of 220, 250, a low of 215, settling 215, 20, unchanged on the day. August, a high of 220, 230, a low of 215, 30, settling 215, 40, up 10. July soybean oil, a high of 23.60, a low of 23.12, settling 23.16, up 21. August, a high of 23.65, a low of 23.23, and settling 23.24, up 18 on the day. Settlement prices also in on the Chicago Mercantile Exchange in Celeste. I see a lot of green on the screen today.
Yeah, change from last week, huh?
Yep.
Prices higher today on the Merc. August feeder cattle, the high 113.60, the low 111.55. The settlement 113.25, that up 155. September 112.40, the high 110.50, the low 112. The settlement, that up 132. October feeder cattle, 110.95, the high 109.50, the low. Finishing today at 110.55, up $1. June live cattle, 85.70 the high, 85.05 the low, 85.30 the settlement, that up 32.5. August, 84 even the high, 83.20 the low, 83.57.5 the settlement, that up 15. June lean hog, 69 even the high, 68.30 the low, 68.40 the settlement, that up 20. July, 69.07.5 the high, 68.25 the low, 68.60 the settlement, that up 65. August lean hog, 67.45 the high, 66.75 the low, the settlement, 67.02.5 that up 27.5. October lean hogs, 58.65 the high, 57.85 the low, the settlement, 58.45 that up 67.5. And July bellies were up 145 today, the high 72.40, the low 70.75, the settlement 72.17.5, again that finishing up 145. The Dow up 2 points at 10,463, the NASDAQ up 5 at 2076, the S&P 500 up 1 at 1197.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from Warden Martin Subaru, a Subaru Stellar Performer certified dealership, now in their new location in front of the Savoy 16 Theater across from Warden Martin Nissan. Information on the web at wardenmartin.subaru.com.
It's time once again to Ask Dr. Science. So let's ask Dr. Science.
That's me.
Remember, he knows more than you do.
That's right.
Charles Gullich from Garland, Texas writes, Dear Dr. Science, are clams really happy? How can you tell?
Compared to what? Clams are certainly happier than many miserable mussels. A clam's mouth is so wide you can't see the downturned corners to indicate sadness. A pouting clam would appear as any other. What does shellfish have to get excited about anyway? I think the expression happy as clams contains a certain amount of irony. It means not having big problems more than it means having a big fun. Clams are like people who work 40 years at the same job, counting the days to retirement. They're not terrified, but they're not exactly bubbling over with joy either.
Thank you, Dr. Science. Send your science questions to Ask Dr. Science. Remember, he's not a real doctor.
I have a master's degree
in science.
Produced by Duck's Breath and distributed by PRI. To purchase the Duck's Breath 30th Anniversary Show on DVD featuring Dr. Science, Randy of the Redwood, Ian Scholes, and other classic characters, visit drscience.com or call 800-989-DUCK.
1 minute before 2 o'clock. This is the Afternoon Magazine on W.